Hello, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Are we ready for our meeting tonight? Let's have one. My name is Jeff, and I am an alcoholic. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the Nabbit Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with one or more years of sobriety tells his or her story. And this is the eighth preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorse nor oppose any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
My name is Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, I must have this thing. Billy A. from the Primary Purpose Group and Johns Creek, not the other Primary Purpose Group that is in Dunwoody and Ridgeview. He was visiting Gainesville at the noon meeting of the Friendship Group at the Hawk Club, and he shared on a subject. The topic was probably something along the lines of, are things getting better? He was just telling about the promises that were coming true in his life. And he did tell me later, when I was speaking with him, about a special amends he made. If you remember what it was, I hope you'll share it with us later when you come up tonight. So please welcome Billy A., who's celebrating 2 years come June.
My name is Billy, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 15th, 2013. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor, and his sponsor has a sponsor. I have a grand sponsor. I think if you put my sobriety and Joe B's sobriety and his sponsor, John, and then his sponsor together, you know, I've been benefiting from about 70 or 80 years, you know, worth of sobriety. And you know, that's what this program is about. I was talking with Charlie earlier. It was so amazing. You know, 2 years ago, I would have never thought that I'd be, you know, here at 8111, you know, telling my story. This is exactly the way it's, you know, supposed to be. And, you know, tonight I just want to, I'm a real relationship person. I'm in sales. And so I just want to, you know, give you a feel of kind of, you know, who I am, kind of my background, you know, how I was raised, and a little bit about my family and, you know, our alcoholism. And, you know, just kind of share with you, you know, on my heart. I didn't really make any notes. I felt like I just, you know, needed to pray before this and just, you know, let my thoughts go and let, you know, let God, my higher power, you know, guide me. And, you know, hopefully you'll be able to, you know, be able to get something out of it. Tell you a little bit about me. I'm 55. I'm a baby boomer. I was born in 1959. My parents were in the military. So I was born in Naples, Italy. You can tell by my accent, I'm not Italian. So, you know, my dad was an alcoholic. I kind of make fun of my upbringing. I'm an only child, and you know, I'm kind of dating myself. If you can imagine, you know, Mother Teresa being married to George Jones, that's kind of the way, you know, I grew up. And my dad was a raging alcoholic, and my mother didn't drink. She didn't smoke. You know, she didn't cuss. I mean, she was a churchgoer. And you know, how they wound up together, I have no idea. I mean, obviously, they were in love. But, you know, I just grew up in a real, you know, dichotomous type of environment. Just two extreme lifestyles, you know, trying to come together. And it was pretty tough. I have a lot of alcoholism in my family. My dad, who's passed away now, was one of five, and all five of them were alcoholics. My dad was the oldest. The next one, my Aunt Peggy, died of this disease. My Uncle Charlie was a physician in Raleigh, North Carolina, and the house that they lived in, I mean, literally you could get lost in it. And they didn't find my Aunt Peggy for 2 days. You know, it was not unlike her to just go off in the basement or go off in a room and, you know, drink by herself, and nobody thought, you know, anything different, and they couldn't find her for a couple of days. And they found her slumped over in the chair, you know, in a room. She'd been dead for a couple of days. The next one down, my Uncle Paul, my dad's brother, drowned in my grandparents' fish pond. Most of my relatives are from southern Alabama. They were either in the textile business or in the farming industry. My grandfather was a big farmer in southern Alabama and had a catfish pond in his backyard. And so the story goes, you know, my Uncle Paul, got drunk one night and decided he was going to go fishing, you know, in the John boat at 1 o'clock in the morning. And whether or not he caught the cramps or, you know, or what happened, but anyway, I mean, they found him floating, you know, in the fish pond, you know, the next morning. The next one down, my Uncle Sammy, in and out of rehab. I mean, he's in his early 70s now, and he just gets kicked out of one rehab and one halfway house after the other. You know, they can't do anything with him, you know. He's just not willing to, you know, to lay the drink down. And then the next one down, my Uncle Mike is actually a minister, but he's an alcoholic. You know, he doesn't drink now. I mean, he's dry. I don't necessarily know if he's, you know, living a peaceful life, but you know, he's been affected from alcoholism. And so, you know, I learned from a very early age, you know, what it was like to be an alcoholic, you know, and what the behavior was. Kind of give you I'm going to tell a few stories, you know, some of my drinking stories. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on a drunkalog. I mean, we'd still be here tomorrow, you know, telling some of the stories. But, you know, I kind of want to give you an idea of, you know, of how I drank and some of the things that, you know, happened to me, and you know, what it was like, and, you know, how I came into AA, and, you know, what it's been like since. And I want to try to spend more time on that, because to me that's what's really, you know, important. I mean, that's you know, that's what saved my life. But just to kind of give you an idea of my upbringing, I'll tell you a little story. My Uncle Hub and my dad were big fishermen. I grew up fishing, and we were stationed in Fort Benning, Georgia, and my Uncle Hub and my dad decided they wanted to go on a camping trip on the Chattahoochee River. So anyway, we all three loaded up, and I was probably about maybe 10 or 11 years old. So we loaded up the boat, and we headed down the Chattahoochee to go camping and go fishing for the weekend. So anyway, by the time we got in the boat and started heading down the river, they had already broke out the moonshine. That's what my Uncle Hub, you know, liked to drink. So, and within an hour or two into end of the trip, you know, they were already, you know, three sheets into the wind. So the first night, we found a little place on the riverbank just to stop and to, you know, and to fish. We set out trot lines and everything, and so we finally managed to get camp set up, and we had docked the boat and everything, and I had gotten inside the tent. You know, I was tired and been with hanging out with a couple of drunks all day, and so I'm laying there in the tent, and I heard the boat, you know, start up. So anyway, so I got up, luckily, got outside of the tent, and about that time, you know, I saw my dad in the boat, and he just floored it down on the gas, and there goes the boat, and shit, I had to get out of the way, because there goes the tent along with him. he had tied the boat up just to one of the tent pegs, you know, I mean, of the tent. And so, hell, he's going down the river, you know, the boat's not planing out. He's dragging tent and everything, you know, right behind him. So, I mean, that's just some of the, you know, the crap that, you know, that I grew up in. My, I'll tell you, it was something else. My, you know, my dad was in the Korean War, and he was in the Vietnam War, and, you know, he just had a lot of problems, and, you know, I had a lot of resentment toward my dad for a long time because, you know, I just didn't feel like he was really, you know, there for me. I mean, he had a big heart, and, you know, probably gave me everything that, you know, that I wanted, but the one thing that he didn't give me was, you know, just to spend time with me. You know, I can never depend on him. Yeah, I grew up in a lot of fear, and yeah, that's one thing I hope to kind of, you know, relay to you tonight is, you know, kind of, I guess, my makeup, you know. I mean, you know, why I drank and, you know, why I had all this, you know, this fear in my life. And, you know, in growing up, I knew on a Friday night, if my dad wasn't home by around 4 or 5 o'clock, I knew what we were in store for. You know, I knew he had been drinking, and my dad was not a pleasurable drunk at all. He was just one of those that just—he had no composure. I mean, my dad could take one drink, and you could see it written all over his face. And without, you know, within, you know, the second or third drink, he'd just fallen down. You know, I mean, he just couldn't compose himself. And yeah, I grew up seeing my dad, you know, sprawled out on the back porch, you know, drunk and, you know, slobbering. I'd see him wake up on, you know, Sunday mornings or Saturday mornings, you know, with his face all, you know, beat up from, you know, falling on the steps. He was a big guy and always had knee problems. You know, he'd fall on the steps and, you know, bust his head open. And, you know, he'd have to call into work, you know, on Monday morning, tell him, you know, he wasn't going to be there, and, you know, would make some kind of lame excuse just to, you know, why he couldn't show up for work that day. And it was just really embarrassing for me. And, you know, I swore I would never, ever, you know, drink like that. And it's always the famous, you know, famous last words. So, you know, that I was just always around that, the violence, you know, but between my parents, you know. I mean, I was a little guy. You know, I was 11 or 12. I probably weighed 80 pounds. And, you know, when I was telling you about my mom and, you know, her not drinking, she, you know, she always thought she could fix my dad, you know. She always chose the wrong time to do it, and that's when he was drinking. You know, I mean, we all know, I mean, you just can't rationalize, you know, with a drunk. And, you know, I just remember countless nights and days, you know, with my dad having my mom backed up in a, you know, in a corner, you know, trying to choke her, you know, her trying to wrestle him, and, you know, I mean, and there I am trying to, you know, get in the middle of them, you know, and get them separated. And I remember one night we were in Fort Benning, Georgia. I was probably about 12, and, you know, I thought she was going to have a nervous breakdown. You know, I mean, we're in the bedroom, and I mean, he's just stone cold drunk and just absolutely just crazy, you know. And he's trying to get at her, you know, and she's on the bed kind of backed into the corner, and I'm in the middle of him, and, you know, and he's trying to get around me, you know, to get a hold of her. I mean, he's just wanting to choke her. I mean, you could just see the, you know, the rage, you know, in his face. You know, and I'm just, you know, I'm like, what the hell, you know? I mean, what, you know, why do you have to be? When he wasn't drinking, he was just such a different person, you know. And I saw the Jekyll, you know, and Hyde in him. And for so long, I had a lot of resentment over that until I started drinking the same way, and then I started understanding, you know, what it was, you know, what it was all about. I had my first drink. Well, let me back up just a little bit. When I got ready to go into high school, my parents decided that they wanted to move to L.A., Lower Alabama, for all you northern people here. So, you know, I'm raised in this military background. You know, we always lived on military bases. And, you know, we lived in California, and we lived in Germany for a while, and, you know, I was born in Italy, and we lived all over the U.S., and then all of a sudden, I go into the ninth grade, and they moved me to this small southern town called Opp, Alabama, OPP. So, and there's a lot of jokes about Opp. So, but anyway, you know, here I remember my first day. I show up. My grandfather actually, my dad actually hadn't retired yet, so I'm there with my grandfather to have me enrolled in high school. And so here's all these guys, you know, they short hair. You know, this is in 1974. So they're in Levi's and Lee jeans and short hair and boots. And here's Billy. I got on a pair of platform shoes and cuff paisley bell-bottom pants, got my John Travolta silk shirt, you know, buttoned down, and I got hair about down to here. And they're like, you know, who in the hell, you know, is this guy, you know? It was just a total culture shock, you know, for me. And so there again, you know, it was all about fear. You know, one thing I've always experienced in my life, everywhere that I went, shy of coming into the program, I just never felt like I really fit in anywhere. Because we moved around so much, you know, every 2 years, packing everything up, leaving, going to a different state. And so lucky for me a little bit, you know, my grandfather was a farmer there in Opp, and I had grandparents lived in Andalusia, which is the next town over, and uncles and aunts. So, you know, everybody knew my family, you know, and kind of knew our last name. So I kind of had that going for me. But anyway, that's when I had my first drink. You know, I was 14. I needed to fit in, so it was beer and marijuana. You know, I mean, that was my introduction. And actually, it was marijuana was the first. And I did that quite a bit, and then it was alcohol. But just to give you an idea of kind of how I drank, right from the start, you know, it was no holds barred for me. I mean, once I found something to change the way I felt, something to make me feel better, I mean, I latched on to it, and I was not going to, you know, not going to let go. To give you an idea, during my high school years, I totaled out 4 cars, my dad's truck, my mom's, you know, for those of you, I really date myself now, Deuce and a Quarter, Lector 225, they're about a block long. I wrecked that, and then wrecked 2 cars of my own, and you know, luckily nobody was, you know, was hurt. But you know, I remember that first wreck. It's Friday night after a football game, and I had a case of Pony Millers. That's what we used to drink. You know, get them in an 8-pack. Of course, we've been drinking, smoking weed all through the game, and then we all congregated back at the high school. I mean, we're talking a town of about 7,500 minutes, so you know, this is just out in the country, and so we all congregate back at the high school, and, you know, I'm on my dad's truck, and so I go to the liquor store, load up with a case of beer, you know, and when everybody, after the football game, we meet at the high school, and then after that, everybody goes to the skating rink. This is what we did. We hung out in the skating rink parking lot. So I'm headed, and you know, it's about a mile away, and I'm headed to the skating rink, you know, got a case of beer in the front seat, and got my window down, you know, we don't run the air conditioning back then, and so I get to the skating rink, you know, and I'm just, it's probably about 9:30 or 10 o'clock by that time, and I'm just looking out the window, you know, and yelling at everybody in the parking lot, hey, you know, probably got a beer in my hand. Make a left-hand turn right into the parking lot. Well, didn't realize, I mean, there's a carload, four women coming the other way. I mean, and they just, I mean, T-boned me, you know, right in the side. Totaled my dad's truck out, pushed me up into the parking lot. And, you know, police and everything are there. But, you know, back then, I mean, you got away with stuff like that, you know. I mean, everybody knew you, and of course, insurance had to pay for their cars and everything, but luckily nobody was hurt. And, you know, I get a slap on the wrist, and all boys will, you know, will be boys, and, you know, and that was the end of it. And, you know, that's a really valid, you know, I guess, point in my life, because it seemed like with all my drinking from that point forward, there were really no repercussions, you know, for me. Never got a DUI, got taken to jail lots of times, you know, public intoxication, you know, reckless driving, but I was always able to get out of them. And if I wasn't able to get out of them, then my parents, you know, bailed me out. They'd give me the money or buy me another car, you know, whatever the case may be. And I think I had a lot of resentment, you know, toward my mom especially because, I mean, she was trying to do the best she could, but, I mean, she enabled me, you know. I mean, I never had to pay the consequences, you know, of my, you know, of my drinking. So, all the way through high school, I wrecked four cars. I get suspended. I got so much anger inside, you know. I fought a lot, and that's kind of the way my dad always taught me to, I guess, defend myself and to get my way was to fight, because that's what he did. And so I'm lucky to make it out of high school. I was suspended, I know of at least three times, and almost expelled for fighting, you know, just because of my violent, you know, behavior. I just had everything just bottled up inside, you know, all of this rage and all of this fear, and it just had to come out, you know, in some way or another. So anyway, but I made it out of high school and actually went to college and graduated from college, believe it or not. Actually went to a Baptist college, and my uncle was the chaplain there. And, you know, I was searching for something, you know, I guess just to help me with life, you know, in general. I mean, I just had this big void inside of me. I just knew something was missing, you know, and I was just really tired of living, you know, the way that I did. But all the way through college, you know, it was the same thing. You know, my drinking patterns were always one that would go completely, you know, overboard. And my drinking, you know, over the years wound up costing me three marriages. I married a girl that I graduated from college with. It was a, you know, a born-again Christian, and I thought she could help me stop drinking. You know, if I could marry someone that was complete opposite from me, then, you know, her influence on my life and, you know, possibly God, you know, could help me with my alcoholism. And certainly, I guess we all know that, I mean, that just doesn't work, you know. And that marriage lasted about 5 years. You know, I'm not proud of it, but, you know, when I drank, when I got the first drink in me, I mean, it was no holds barred for me. I mean, I lost all inhibitions for, you know, the sanctity of marriage, for, you know, being a good employee, for, you know, just anything. I mean, just when I started drinking, that's the only thing that mattered. You know, I wrecked company vehicles. You know, I got fired from jobs. I just look back and, you know, the sad thing about it is I never, you know, the big book talks about it. I mean, it just became normal for me. You know, I mean, that kind of behavior became normal for me. And I just didn't understand it. So anyway, I got divorced and I decided, well, if I'm going to drink, then I might as well find someone who drinks like me. And so that's what I did. So my second marriage was a lady who's the mother of my two children who drank just like I did. And we partied. And, you know, I wound up being married to her for 17 years and, you know, lost lots of jobs during that 17 years. And there again, didn't take the, you know, the sanctity of marriage very well. I mean, I acted like a single person, and, you know, I was fortunate to always have good jobs, and, you know, I would bounce back, and, you know, I was able to manage my drinking in a sense to where, you know, I was always able to bounce back, you know, and get myself back on my feet. There again, no really repercussions, you know, for my drinking, nothing to say, you know, what the hell are you doing, you know? I mean, this is not the normal lifestyle, you know, for an individual. But I kept on. So anyway, after 17 years of marriage, she just couldn't, you know, she couldn't take it anymore. So I go through divorce number two. And so I'm in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. I'm single. And, you know, I remember I had a customer that was in Valiant, Oklahoma. I don't know if any of you know. It's right across the Arkansas-Oklahoma line. And this little town was a very much a blue-collar town. They had a Georgia Pacific mill there, and I sold hardware. And I called on this hardware store there in Valiant. Got to be really good friends with the store owner. And I started going to this little pub called the Alibi. And I always kind of grew up playing pool and loved to play nine ball and liked to play for money. And so I started frequenting this little pub. Not really called a pub. I mean, it was a bar. It was a BYOB. They served beer, but you'd have to go out in the parking lot to, you know, to drink your liquor. And of course, we'd smoke weed and everything else out there. And I remember my customer telling me, Willie, he just got back from Iraq, and he said, Billy, he said, let me tell you, you know, it's a dangerous place there. And he goes, I'm just telling you, you don't fit in. These people are not your friends. You may think you're having a good time, but you're going to wind up, you know, in some pretty serious trouble if you quit going there. So I'm like, yeah, you know. And so anyway, I was there calling on Willie's store one Friday night, and some of the work we had to do was such that I had to wind up spending the night. So I thought I'd made some good friends at the Alibi, and so I go in there, and, you know, on a Friday night, and yeah, I realize, I mean, here I am, I should have realized this, you know, but this is just how, you know, alcoholism, this is how, you know, stupid, you know, we are, or I am. You know, I'm in this place, you know, everybody's got on, you know, coveralls and boots and, you know, grease under their nails. Nothing wrong with that, I'm just saying, but here's Billy, you know, with a polo shirt and starch khakis and, you know, I mean, loafers, you know. It's like, damn, Billy, you know, this is just, you know, this is not a good scenario. So anyway, so, you know, we commit to, you know, to drinking and shooting pool, and then we go out to the parking lot and we start shooting tequila. We go back in and, you know, we shoot some more nine ball. And we go out to the parking lot and we shoot some more tequila, and we come back in and we drink more beer. Then we go out to the parking lot and we start shooting tequila and we start smoking weed. And we go back in and we start playing nine ball. And so the night progresses on and on, and you know, I was never a blackout drinker. I just go batshit crazy. I mean, I really do. I just turn into, my MO was always, you know, Mr. Friendly, you know, then you try to be, you know, the funny guy, and then you start being a little bit of a smartass. Then I start being a little belligerent, and then by night's end, you know, I'm just a total ass, and I'm just wanting to pick a fight, you know, with whoever's in there. Well, I picked the wrong night, you know, to be an asshole in this place. And I got the shit beat out of me. I mean, not just a little bit, but a lot. I'm lucky I made it out of there alive. I don't remember a whole lot. All I remember is I'm on the ground and I'm just trying to cover up, and I got boots kicking me and I got fists slinging. And I mean, all I could feel is just, you know, I just remember the feeling is like, and damn, just, you know, somebody get these people off of me, you know, because I mean, I don't know if it was two or if it was three or whatever, but it seemed like the entire bar was on my ass. And so anyway, you know, it finally stopped, you know, and this one guy or whatever, you know, comes and picks me up, you know, and kind of gets me out of the door. And just shuts the door behind me, you know, and I'm just bleeding everywhere. And so I get over to my car, and the only thing I could think of was to call my friend Willie. And he was at deer camp, and so I called him. By the time it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, Willie, I'm at the Alibi. And he just starts laughing, and I said, I just got beat up pretty bad. And he was like, I told you. So he's like, damn it, Billy, I told you. And I go, I know. I said, you know, I'm filling up hand towels with blood. I said, you know, I know my jaw's broke. I mean, it already started swelling. My nose was just laying over to one side. You know, I'm beat to hell and back. And I said, look, I can't drive. I mean, I could see my hotel from the bar. I said, but, you know, I don't want to drive. I don't want to get a DUI on top of this. You know, can you come and get me, you know, and at least drive me, you know, to the hotel? And so he did, you know, drove about 45 minutes from deer camp and came and got me. And, you know, he saw me and he was like, damn, Billy. So he takes me to the hotel. So, you know, I can't drive. So I'm laying there at this little hotel called the King's Inn. I'm there just laying on my bed. I'm looking up at the ceiling. By that time, it's about 3 o'clock in the morning. And my head's just, I mean, my whole face. I mean, I went and looked in the mirror and my eyes were both were already starting to swell shut. I mean, my head was literally, you know, twice the size of what, I mean, you couldn't even recognize me, you know. And I'm just laying there in bed and like, you know, what the hell am I doing? You know, so I got up the next morning, and I got to drive from Valiant to Little Rock in this state, and it's about a 4.5 hour drive. And I remember calling my wife, and you know, I had to tell her. I said, "Look, you know, here's what happened," and I said, "You know, you're going to have to tell the kids, you know, that when I walk through the door." You know, I just didn't want him to start screaming and crying because, I mean, you know, I mean, no words can describe what my, you know, what my face looked like. And so anyway, by the time I got to the doctor on that Monday, it was, I mean, I got 5 screws in my jaw. So, I mean, they broke my jaw, you know, and they did break my nose, had to get it set. And you would have thought after that experience that I quit drinking. But nope, you know. That wasn't the end of it for me. And so anyway, that marriage ended, and so I kind of backed up a little bit. But I got to Ocean Springs, and, you know, my drinking continued. And, you know, I kind of want to interject with this. You know, all throughout my drinking career, there were times when I would quit drinking, you know, for 8 or 10 months, maybe 6 months. I would try to use my faith to help me stop drinking. And that just didn't work for me. And it didn't work for me because I didn't have a support system. You know, I didn't have anybody that I could tell, you know, hey, this is how I drink. You know, this is how I feel. And this is why I drink. I mean, this is what's happening in my life, you know. I mean, I wanted to reach out to somebody, but I didn't know how, you know. Especially in church. I mean, you know, in church you feel like that those are the people that you're supposed to be able to confide in and, you know, and to relate to, but you can't, you know. At least I couldn't. So anyway, you know, I would go through periods of time where, you know, I would be dry and, you know, I'd go to church and try to get involved in Sunday school and try to get involved in a, you know, in a group. But sooner or later, you know, life would happen. And that's what would happen to me. I mean, life would happen. And that's why I drank, you know. And I think that's why a lot of us drink, you know. It's just, I never learned how to cope with life. You know, I didn't have any skills to cope with life. When things started happening chaotically in my life, the only thing I knew to do was to drink or smoke weed or do cocaine or take, you know, Lorcabs or Ativan or Xanaxes or, you know, really whatever I could get my hands on to change the way I feel. You know, because I didn't like the way that I felt. And my last year of drinking, I'd moved to Atlanta and got remarried for a third time. And this lady had no idea of how I drank. And it's actually a lady that I dated in high school, and we reconnected on Facebook. And I moved to Atlanta. We started dating, and we got married. And, you know, she would wonder how, after just a couple of glasses of wine, I could be so batshit crazy. But what she didn't realize is that I was at the liquor store at 10:30 that morning, you know, buying the vodka minis. I mean, I still find them to this day, you know, empty ones. I'd buy 6 or 8, and you know, I call on customers all day long in that state, you know, thinking, well, they're not going to, you know, I'd drink the, you know, the coconut-flavored vodkas, you know, or the orange-flavored vodkas, and, you know, that they wouldn't smell it on me. And so anyway, for that entire last year of my drinking, that's how I drank. I drank every day. I have two or three liquor stores that, well, I actually lived in the Dunwoody area before I moved up to Johns Creek after my divorce, but I had about three liquor stores that I went to. So anyway, I've kind of done what I said I wasn't going to do. So let me fast forward into, it was the night before Father's Day, and I just had enough. You know, I had it in my heart that I'd had enough. And I got back to Atlanta. I went to a therapist, and she goes, "You're an alcoholic." I'm like, "No shit." And she goes, "You need AA." And I'm like, "All right." So that was on a Wednesday. And Friday, I show up at a noon meeting at Primary Purpose. And I've been coming ever since. When I got, you know, I got there on that Friday, I sat in the chair right by the door. I cried the entire meeting. I was embarrassed. I didn't know what to do. But what God gave me at that time was, you know, it was really the gift of desperation, you know. I just didn't have anything else, you know, to turn to. And I said, you know, what do I need to do? I said, well, you need to get a sponsor. You need to come to meetings. You know, you need to buy you a big book. You need to buy you a 12 and 12. You need to show up before the meeting. You need to stay after the meeting. You got to make AA and your sobriety your number one priority. And that's what I did. They said, go to 90 meetings in 90 days, you know. I logged kind of my meetings. You know, I went over 250 meetings in my first 90 days. I was going to three and four meetings a day. I had to change the people, places, things that I went to. You know, I couldn't go to the bars anymore. I couldn't hang out with the friends I did anymore. I had to, you know, really just build myself a cocoon, basically, with the program, with AA people, with my steps. And little by little, you know, the things started changing. Fast forward 2 years, my life has just taken a complete 180, you know. I've got the best job I've ever had, you know, in my entire career. You know, I'm happy at it. I'm productive. I enjoy getting up and going to work every morning. You know, I wound up going through that third divorce, and about a year into my sobriety, I needed to make an amends to this lady. And she agreed to meet me at Starbucks. And so we met for coffee. And you know, I just wanted to tell her I was sorry, you know, and tell her, you know, that I recognized my part in, you know, in the demise of our relationship. And, you know, I wanted to admit to her about my drinking and, you know, that I had a year in the program and things were really, you know, turning around for me. And I'd really written a relationship off. I really didn't have any intentions, you know, or any kind of motive other than just to say, I'm sorry. And so after the meeting, I left, and she emailed me, and she goes, "Well, what did you think about, you know, our meeting?" And I said, "Well, you know, I was comfortable and this and that." And she goes, "You know, so was I." And she goes, "Would you like to meet again, you know, for coffee?" And so we did, and so we've been dating for almost a year now and getting ready to, you know, to get remarried. And, you know, she just said, she goes, "I just could see the difference in you, you know, just your attitude, the way you presented yourself, the way you carried yourself. You know, you weren't angry anymore. You weren't making excuses anymore. You know, what was happening is I just showed up, you know, in my own life." You know, this program has absolutely saved my life. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I love going to meetings. I go to meetings daily, and I go to meetings all over the state. And just like with Charlie and with Tim, you know, when I'm in Gainesville, I try to go to the new meeting there. I try to get there early so I can talk with people, smoke cigarettes with people before the meeting and do the same afterwards, you know. And I just want others to know, you know, how this program has helped me, you know, and how it's changed my life. And, you know, just try to live by, you know, live by example. So I appreciate the opportunity to let me share with you. Hope you got something out of it. I'm very grateful to be here and very grateful for AA. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Billy, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us tonight.
Time.